Hello everyone and welcome to Inside the Arena podcast, brought to you by Piers Arena. On Inside the Arena podcast, we talk about mental health, well-being, and every other issues and challenges we all face in our day-to-day lives. And on each episode, we'll be having a guest on to talk about their own experience with these issues, and most importantly, how they are able to navigate and overcome life struggles and challenges. I am your host, Tony, and thank you very much for listening. Hello everyone, today we have an amazing guest. This is truly a conversation I've been looking forward to because of how educative and informative this episode is going to turn out to be, which I truly believe. Without further ado, let me just introduce or have our guest introduce themselves so we can get a better understanding of who he is and what we'll be talking about today. So good day and thank you very much for taking the time to have this conversation with me.
Yes, good evening and thank you very much for having me. My name is Dr. Chukwudi Njoku, and I'm a geographer and an environmentalist. I also have expertise in geographic information systems. I'm interested in solving problems in the society, social problems, environmental problems, as well as economic problems. And I apply my expertise and my skills to solve these problems through research, through intervention, through capacity building, and other ways. So it's a pleasure to be here today to talk about issues bordering Nigeria and of course a timely issue like flooding. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's exactly part of the reason why I really wanted to talk to you. I became aware of you when the flooding happened recently. I was deeply touched and concerned. I think the last time this kind of flooding happened, according to what I've seen so far, was a decade ago. And I wasn't so aware of my environment and what was truly happening. But this time, it really caught my attention. And I really wanted to, just as a concerned individual, to understand what's actually going on with that whole situation. And if there are actually ways we can actually avoid some of the unnecessary suffering that was put out on display for everybody to actually see. So, like I said, I became aware of you when I was doing some research. I saw you had a couple of interviews on TVC channels, and I really wanted to talk to you and get your take on everything that's happening. And once again, thank you very much for taking the time to have this conversation with me to give a general overview. What can you really tell us about the flooding that's been happening in recent times, like in the past couple of weeks?
Okay, thank you very much. The flooding that we're seeing currently, I must say, first of all, that it's not new. Flooding is a normal occurrence in Nigeria. And of course, in other parts of the world, flooding would always happen. And it will continue to happen even in the future. So what it means is that we're still going to see flood occurrences like this in Nigeria. But what we pray for is that it's not at the scale at which we are seeing currently. Yeah, so flooding is not new in Nigeria. It happens every other year. Now, some people do not even know that flooding happens every other year in Nigeria. But then it comes in different scales. We had a similar occurrence like we're seeing in 2022, in 2012, where most parts of the country were flooded and the impacts were so devastating. And that is a similar kind of flooding we're seeing now, even though it is said that what we're seeing now is even more than what we saw in 2012. But apart from these two periods where we're seeing very severe and very devastating scale of flooding, we have flooding happening every other year in Nigeria, especially along the rivers. Yeah, so Nigeria is a riverine country. And in fact, the country is named after the River Niger. So that's to tell you that it's a riverine country. We have the River Niger, we have the River Benue. We also have lots of other rivers like the Ogun River that crisscrosses through Ogun State and empties into the Atlantic Ocean. We have the Osun River that's also in the southwestern part of the country. We have the Cross River in Cross River State. We also have the Imo River, which empties also into the Cross River at some parts before the Cross River also empties into the Atlantic Ocean. We have the Calabar River, which also is a tributary of the Cross River, and it's also an estuary from the Atlantic Ocean. So you see, we have lots of these rivers. We have the Lake Chad Basin, That particular area also has lots of water bodies, apart from the Lake Chad, which we know is also facing issues of climate change and shrinking. But notwithstanding, we have rivers in the north, in the west, in the south, and in every other part of the country. So you'd expect that you have river flooding happening in most of these areas where we have rivers. That's the uniqueness of Nigeria's hydrology. Apart from these rivers, we also have a very unique topography, which is quite undulating. We have low-lying areas in some places. We have plateaus in some other places. We have mountains in some parts of the country. And the topography is undulating. So those places that are very low-lying, like the valleys, which you have especially around along the course of the River Niger and the River Benue and some other big rivers, of course, are prone to flooding. And that's why you see that some people are more impacted and more affected by this flooding than some other places.
Yeah, you're absolutely right by saying flooding is not something that is new to Nigeria. It's a common reoccurrence. That was something I quickly discovered when I was actually looking into this whole situation. And like you said, a lot of people do not know that, right? Until it gets to this particular scale in which we're experiencing and seeing right now. But also something I discovered when I was actually looking into this is like flooding is like the prevalent natural, one of the prevalent natural disasters we have in Nigeria. But unlike some natural disasters, flooding can actually be controlled, right? To an extent, not completely. And the negative effects that flooding has can actually be mitigated. The impact. Is that something you can actually speak on?
Yeah, of course. You're right. Flooding can be mitigated. It can even be prevented to a particular level. Unlike disasters like earthquakes, tsunamis, you know, earthquakes, you really can't do anything about it. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. It's instigated by some kind of forces at the crust of the earth. And there's really nothing you can do to prevent it, you know, as a human being. So you're quite right when you say flooding, unlike some other disasters, can be prevented and mitigated. And and that is true because for flooding, you can actually leverage early warning systems to make sure that you do not feel the impact as you should have. That means that you can actually rely on structures that give information early enough to tell you that there's possibility of flooding. And how do we even know that there's a possibility of flooding, flood hazard going to happen? From information about rainfall, information about temperature, information from some kind of geospatial analysis that will tell people that some places are prone to flooding more than some other places. So all this combined together can actually help to inform people early enough of the risks to flood hazard. And that is one way that we can actually rely on to see that we do not expose ourselves to the risk of flooding. Yes, so flooding can be mitigated. It can also, some other infrastructure can also be put in place, like putting up dikes when it comes to ocean flooding from the ocean. The government can put dikes just by the edge of the ocean. When it comes to river flooding as well, with what we see with inland rivers in Nigeria, dikes can also be set up to prevent the impacts of the flooding. Dams can also be built along the course of the river to control the volume of water that, you know, flows through some of these rivers, and, you know, regulate these waters and also harvest the water for other anthropogenic uses like agriculture, electricity generation and the like. So dams can also be built along river courses to regulate the flow of these rivers and reduce flood occurrences, or at least reduce the impacts of floods when they happen. Yeah, so you're right, flooding can be mitigated. It can be mitigated through early warning and early response. It can also be mitigated through civil engineering, where infrastructure like dikes are built along courses of the ocean or the rivers, or infrastructure like dams are built as well. Of course, there are other ways it can be mitigated.
Yeah. I think my next question would actually be, you talked about the early warning systems and how important that is to actually warn people and which would actually lead to evacuation and the rest of it. So now, what are some of the primary causes of this particular flooding that just happened recently. And in this particular situation, were people informed of the likelihood of this amount of flooding that actually occurred a couple of weeks ago?
Okay. So floods generally are caused by two major factors. We have the natural factors, and then we have the anthropogenic factors. That is the human-induced factors. So for the natural factors, we have increase in rainfall volume. So when there's so much rainfall falling at a particular time, at a very short period of time, it could lead to flooding. And some other natural factors would also include increased temperature. So when we have temperature increasing, it would have a situation where the land surface is drying so much. And when it's drying so much, it reduces the percolation rate of the soil. That means it reduces the rate at which the soil can collect and retain water. So what it means is that as the rain is falling, the water is just flowing off the surface quickly. It is not going down into the subsoil. And that can also cause flooding, because normally the soil is supposed to be able to collect water and retain it. So we have increased rainfall, inability of the soil to collect water due to increased temperature. And we see that happening in the north, where we have drought and desertification occurring in the very far parts of the north. So now, apart from these natural forces, which we may not be able to control, and of course has been attributed to climate change, we also have human factors. Human factors here could include negligence. For example, we know that there's a dam in Cameroon, and we know that they get to release water from time to time. And when we do not keep abreast with information about when they are going to release this water, that kind of negligence can lead to a flood hazard. We also have overpopulated cities that are not planned. When our cities are not planned, like we have most of our cities in Nigeria, they are chaotic. You see that the channels where water is supposed to follow are blocked with buildings, are blocked with all sorts of infrastructure. And then the natural drainage channels of the water is blocked, and the water cannot find its way. So what does it do? It gets into the homes of people. So that's also an anthropogenic factor. We also have people dumping waste in waterways, people dumping waste in gutters, and the gutters which are not even sufficient in the first place. You have people dumping waste in these places. This can also lead to flooding. But the scale of the flooding which we are seeing currently, and which was at the highest point in a couple of weeks back, I strongly believe, is not totally as a result of climate change, in as much as climate change must have contributed through, as I explained earlier, land surface temperature getting so high and the soil is getting so hard, cannot collect water, rainfall increasing and all that. But this particular scale of flooding we're seeing definitely has to do with the release of water from the dam in Cameroon. And this is so because the Minister of Water Resources noted recently on the news, he said that that Cameroon released water from the dam. So there's no doubt that they released water from the dam. And he said that they only gave warning to Nigeria, I think, a day after they released this water from the dam. So that means we were not properly informed about the release of water from this dam. And that's extra volume of water was just too much for our waterways to take. It was too much for our river channels to take. And of course, it swelled the water and flooded the areas around the water. So for this particular flooding that we saw, that we're seeing currently, or that we saw in the year 2022, was definitely exacerbated by the extra water that was released from the dam in Cameroon. Rainfall this year, because I have looked at the data that we have, NIMET predicted a normal precipitation rate for the year 2022. And those are the exact words that they used in their annual 2022 seasonal rainfall prediction documents. They said normal. So that means that based on their assessment, we were not going to have extreme rainfall this year. in 2021, we did not also have extreme rainfall. And of course, we did not see this kind of flooding happening in 2021. We had just 1,114.72 millimeter of rainfall on average for Nigeria. And that was even less than what we had in 2019. In 2019, we had the highest rainfall volume we've seen in like the past 5 years, and that was 1,296 millimeter of rainfall. So you see that in 2022, data is showing that we are not having extreme rainfall. So that means that the rainfall this time definitely was not the leading cause of the flooding we've seen. And I strongly hypothesize that it definitely was as a result of the extra waters from the dam in Cameroon.
Yes, because I actually saw that somewhere also, that because of the dam in Cameroon. And one of the things I quickly also discovered is that when it comes to issues like this, the Nigerian government is more of a reactive government instead of a proactive government when it comes to issues like flooding. You talked about the fact that the Cameroonian government only gave Nigeria the warning a day after they did open their dam. So my question is, even if they had given that information to us a week before, would it have really made any difference?
Okay. So the Nigerian government is reactive. The Nigerian people generally are reactive. We're reactive people. I don't know why that is so. And our consciousness of hazard and our acceptability, our exposure to hazard is very high as a people, right? We do funny things. You see, maybe there's a highway with very fast cars flying, and then the government builds a pedestrian bridge, but people would rather run through the highway instead of using the pedestrian bridge. So that's just to show that our exposure to hazard as human beings is actually very high. But then to your question, if the Cameroonian government had informed us a week earlier, if we would have done anything differently, I do not think we would have done anything differently, really. Because even if they informed us 1 week before, or even 1 month before, what we would expect is that people that live along the course of these major rivers would be evacuated, would be relocated, you know, to some place that has been prepared to take internally displaced persons. But of course, we do not have those structures in place. What we typically do is relocate people to primary and secondary schools around. Yeah, so that goes to show that I don't think we would have done anything differently if we got that information 1 week or even 1 month before. Because, of course, it requires money, resources, financial resources. It requires lots of coordination to put things in place when it comes to early response for a warning that is got, the hazard warning that is gotten. And trust me, you would need more than a month to get money out of the federal government's pocket to put up things in place. So to directly answer your question, I don't think we would have done anything differently if we got the warning even 3 months earlier.
Okay. I asked that question because I actually had the same feeling and the same, I came to the same conclusion when I actually saw that they opened the dam, and that was one of the major factors of the flooding we saw. So in terms of infrastructure, like you rightly pointed out earlier on in this conversation, by saying infrastructures and engineering can be used to actually control flooding in order to mitigate some of the effects, negative effects and impacts that it has in our society. When it comes to infrastructure, like, is there not supposed to be a dam on our own side to hold up the water when, like, the Cameroonian releases their own water from their side? Is there supposed to be like another infrastructure on our side to hold up the water if the season is not right for us to be for that kind of impact of water to come into our river lines, like you rightly said?
Yes. So there's supposed to be a dam. It's very important that there's a dam, because if there's a river upstream that has been dammed, and what are dams? Dams are just basically some kind of concrete infrastructure that it puts across a water body to retain water on the other side of the river. So if you have a dam already on the upper course of a river, I think what happens is, you know, when you have a dam like that, you're supposed to occasionally, I don't know how effective the dam in Cameroon has been for agriculture, because if they do frequent irrigation, for example, then they would be utilizing that water so much, because from time to time they will release it downstream and then it goes into farms that are in the areas at the lower parts of the river. So I'm not really sure how they have been using it for electricity and for agriculture. But then when you have a dam that fills up, you know, over the years and they have reason to always release the water, then it is necessary that downstream of that particular dam, there should be another dam to help with collecting excess water whenever the dam is freed up at the upper course. It is not all dams that have other dams at the downstream of rivers. But then you have situations where some dams, probably their capacity are not big enough, and then there's a need for another dam downstream to collect this water. And what we have seen from the dam in Cameroon with the effects it's having on Nigeria is that there's definitely a need to have another dam downstream. And not just to contain water from the dam in Cameroon. We definitely need this dam because up north, we're having desertification, we're having drought, and farmers need water. They need irrigation, you know, to actually carry out their activities and get good produce. So this dam would be more important to us, not just for collecting excess water from the dam in the Lagdo Dam in Cameroon, but to also help us with irrigation, electricity, which we're lacking, of course, and other things a dam could be used for. So I think it's important we have this dam. I read that Nigeria probably did not have, because the speculation or what people were saying is that this dam, maybe money was released at some point in the 80s or so, or we had an agreement and we said we were going to build the dam and we've not built it. But the government came out to say, no, we didn't have any such plan to build the dam. But even if we did not have the plan to build the dam, then I think it is obvious we need the dam now, right? So it's actually very important to have that dam.
Yes, it is obvious because from everything I've seen, and that's why I love talking to experts like yourself, as much as I would gather information and read things, I would also like to hear firsthand information from experts like yourself to clarify some of these things. Because just like you rightly pointed out about the speculations about maybe there was an agreement that there was the dam on our side, downstream was supposed to be built. So just in case they are opening up theirs, at least we should be able to retain some of the excess water and use it for irrigation and electricity, so as the impact not to be so much on our side when they do decide to release their dams. Because we can actually fault them to an extent, because if they have an excess overflow of water, we don't expect them to suffer when they have the proper infrastructure that has been put into place for them to help alleviate some of that suffering that comes, or some of the negative impacts that comes with that excess flow of water. If there was not an initial agreement, so we don't say we are dying on that hill and we're arguing about that speculation, it is obvious that we do need that infrastructure to actually help for the various in the various ways you actually pointed out just now. That actually brings me to one of the things I also discovered, that just like you talked about the proper infrastructure being put in place and Nigerians are actually reactive instead of proactive, Nigeria is actually experiencing a very high urbanization rate. We can see this in our cities. But one of the depressing and sad thing about that particular situation, as much as it is a good thing for urbanization to take place and for cities to be put up and everything, one of the most important factors that has been ignored is making the provisions for the infrastructures and amenities to actually help when issues like this come up. So what should Nigerians actually have in mind, and what should the government be doing in that regard? Like, we see Lagos, for example, whenever we have heavy rainfall, heavy rainfall every single year, the houses on the islands, it's usually like a mess. Like, there's no proper provisions for infrastructures that has been put in place in such an urban city that is being built with luxurious houses and the rest of it. So how can we actually tackle that issue?
Okay. Yeah, so of course we have very huge issue with our town planning, with our city planning. We have very huge issues with designing our cities, with infrastructure deficits as well. Yeah, so these are issues that are plaguing us, and we're seeing the impacts with how things that would have hitherto not been a problem, like flooding of cities, we're seeing it, you know, play out every day. Now, one thing we should do, first of all, is to consider flood risk vulnerability maps when we are building our cities. Flood risk vulnerability maps. These are maps that show places of high risk to flooding, places of medium risk to flooding, and places of low risk to flooding. Now, because I have done research on this in the past, I have done maps which, if you go online and put my name and say flood risk, you would see some maps I've done for Nigeria, I've done for some other smaller communities. You would see these maps that really you expect that the government, you expect that estate investors, you expect that these people would, you know, take advantage of this research, of this information that is already public, to make some kind of decisions to guide where people build houses, where people do not build houses, where people carry out some kind of agriculture, and where people do not carry out, or where people build some kind of houses that are adaptive to flooding. So if you insist that you want to live in a flood risk zone, then you would expect that you build houses that have, what are they called, rafts or so. Like the kind of houses we see in Makoko, where, okay, silts, they're called silts. We expect that you build houses that are standing on silts. These silts could be wooden, they could be concrete, so that when the water rises to a particular level, maybe the water is rising 2 meters high or 3 meters high, you've built a silt and the house is standing 2 meters above the ground level, such that you do not get affected by some kind of flooding. So we need to take flood risk mapping and vulnerability maps seriously in designing our cities. Also, I've been opportune to work in Abuja, in the Federal Capital Development Authority, and I worked in the planning unit. Now, you expect that cities, we used to do designs for cities then. And if you look at the central business district in Abuja, you see that it's properly designed, drainages are good and all that. But immediately you move out of the city to some of the area councils, you see that it's chaotic. And that chaos, you also see play out in other Nigerian cities, even in Lagos. It is just chaotic. And that shows, that means that the government, especially through its city planning units, its town planning units, are not doing so well with planning, because they allow people build just as they like. And there's so much chaos in all this process, and it's not encouraging. So a whole lot needs to be done by the government in regulating the way buildings are built in our cities, and especially making sure that people do not, that is in a case where there are laws to regulate the way people build, to make sure that people do not build in places where they should not build, especially in places, in waterways and places that have been defined as flood risk zones.
Taking advantage of some of the research you have done also is also something that individuals should be encouraged to do. Like, okay, you look at, okay, you want to buy a land in a specific place to put up whatever building. Do you know if this is like a high risk area, a low risk, or like a medium risk, like you rightly pointed out? I think this is like the first time, me particularly, I'm actually hearing that there's actually research and data and maps that have been put out there for such use and for such information. I think people really need to know that and take advantage of that also, because like we've seen,
people need to know. Even people that are buying land, so now you're a private individual, you want to purchase a property, you need to know if that place is even a flood risk zone. So you just need to go and look at these maps, and then it can even guide you, not as a government, you as an individual who wants to purchase a property, to know that that place is not good for you to purchase. And then you move to another place. And these maps are there. Like I said, if you check online, flood risk map, Nigeria, put my name beside it. Even if you don't, you're going to see some of these maps, a whole lot of these maps out there.
Yeah, because I know there are so many amazing people taking their time and doing this research and putting out that information. The issues with discussions like this sometimes that I've tend to notice is like people often feel disconnected, right? When we bring up issues like this or when topics like this are being discussed, people feel disconnected, like they are not speaking my language or this doesn't directly affect me or whatever the case is. But looking back at the events that has unfolded the past couple of weeks, the impact to people's lives that such events and events like this actually have is something that wakes us up to the reality that, oh, this is indeed a very, very important topic that needs to be tackled, talked about. People need to be informed and pressure needs to be put on the government in order for us to avoid issues like this. Because just looking at the numbers, right, it was said that at least over 600 people were killed by this flooding that happened recently. And over a million people have been displaced. Now, is that something you can actually talk about, like the impact, the human factor impact that these events actually have? And maybe that's something that can actually awaken people to the reality of why these kind of issues need to be on the forefront and why we need to be pushing it very, very seriously.
Yeah, so the impacts are you know, extreme. And if lives were quite valuable in this country, then, I mean, 600 people do not have to die for something that can be mitigated, something that can be prevented, right? So, and that makes it quite worrisome. And quite unfortunately, a whole lot of people are more aware now than they were before, because this particular flooding actually covered more ground than any other flooding we've had recently. And the impacts are, of course, we have both the direct and the indirect impacts. That's more like saying we have the immediate and the subsequent impacts. So we saw lots of the immediate impacts happening when the floods were taking over communities. And that includes the fatalities, people were drowning, people were also getting injured, lots of injuries, you know, apart from the statistics of people drowning. We also had people getting electrocuted. I think I saw one or two news where some people got electrocuted, you know, because the flood would enter into a city and then the power guys will not have, maybe they won't have the time to go and switch off some of the power supply in the city. And then you get people getting electrocuted because you now have live wires inside water. And then it was all chaos like that. So we had the direct impacts, the fatalities, the injuries. We also had people having, you know, shock. Some people probably have died from shock, or you can imagine people that were not even too well, and then the flood catching them up, how they would manage to survive. So all those are direct impacts. But then we have the indirect impacts, which quite unfortunately may have even more effects than the direct impacts, because the indirect impacts can span for even the rest of the year and even up to next year. We have indirect impacts like there's the health implications. You definitely have an increased incidence of waterborne diseases like typhoid, cholera. And why is this going to happen? Most of the water sources that these people rely on, some of them rely on natural sources like rivers. These rivers have been flooded. Some of them rely on wells, you know, hand dug wells we use in some lots of communities in Nigeria. These wells have been flooded and they can never access water from there. Some of them rely on boreholes. Even the boreholes have been flooded. The whole house is flooded. So where do they get water from? They are the mercy of nature. And I saw some very worrisome videos of some places, I think in Bayelsa also, where people were drinking water that wasn't pure because they need to drink water at that point in time. Yeah, so you're not going to have high incidence of waterborne diseases. And then we also have water-related diseases like malaria. Especially when the flood has receded and then you have pockets of water all around the community, you have lots of mosquito larvae, you know, growing in those buckets of water around the community. And you can have high incidence of malaria as well. Apart from these diseases, there's also the, you know, psychological aspect too, where the thought of people living in a community where flooding has happened before, the thought of them continuing to live there, it can be worrisome for them. They keep thinking, what if it happens again? What are we going to do? Where are we going to go to? They think of their loved ones that have died. They think of the fact, and immediately maybe they see a news that says flood. Immediately they see on TV, flood this one. Some of them might have high blood pressure and they just die from just the sight of seeing flood on TV. So there's this psychological problem which can continue even for years. And it's worrisome because that's one particular disease, especially when it comes to how the flood would have affected their mental health, that we don't really talk about so much. So these are also some kind of implications. And then you also have food shortages from the fact that in the coming year, because a lot of crops were damaged in farms, that especially the farms along low-lying areas where we actually farm lots of rice and other crops. You also have the people that are displaced. What do they eat? Especially when the government is not so responsive. What do they eat? It's malnutrition. It's going to be lots of problems like that. So the implications are numerous, you know, just to say a few.
There's this saying that the butterfly flaps his wing here and an earthquake happens like millions of miles away or something. Like, that's exactly what you're talking about like the indirect consequences of this particular event that happens. A couple of months from now, or when Christmas period comes and foodstuffs have actually skyrocketed and people are wondering, why is this thing like this or whatever? People don't actually remember, or they can't actually trail it back to the fact that they were flooding and majority of some of the farm produce that we have were actually affected and destroyed, and those farmlands are not even places that can be used at this particular point. And coming back to even the direct impacts, I even saw some, you talked about seeing a gruesome video where people were affected about with this, where people were drinking water, rather people were drinking this. I even saw videos where burial grounds where corpses were coming out of the ground.
Yeah, we're coming out of the ground. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's
very, very sad to see.
That was horrific. The part that even the living are suffering at this particular point, but even the dead is not even allowed to even rest, is something that that really, really stuck with me. I'm like, God, people don't have to go through this psychological torture of them actually wondering where they are even going to next. And they are all of a sudden they have to leave their environments, leave their communities, leave their houses that are totally unplanned. And even the dead that is even buried in that same, now they have to even worry about the dead.
Reburying the dead all over again.
Like that's crazy. Some people even come back after this flooding and they can't even find their dead where they were actually laid to rest. Like the psychological torture is really, really terrible. And you can't be as a human, right? You feel these things. Like I've been obsessed with this current event, because just like even on your Twitter page itself, right, you have these images of these things and you're creating awareness about I would even like you to tell us about some of the campaigns you're actually doing right now on social media and the importance of it and why people need to be aware of it.
So I was also going to point out one of the impacts that I saw this post on Twitter. One of the poultry farmer in Bayelsa, you know, lost all his birds, thousands of birds, because of course he couldn't get in food for these birds anymore. I mean, that's a multimillionaire business gone down to zero because of the flooding. I mean, we can't keep counting the impacts. And that is why all these reasons are why, you know, I came up with a petition. So for me, it's not the first time I'm tweeting or talking about flooding. I've always advocated from time on flooding issues, trying to, you know, ask questions, put our research out there. Of course, working with some other people who have been very interested in flooding, like I have a colleague, Taiwo Ogunwumi, who runs a civil society organization, Flood Risk Hazard Mapping Initiative, something like that. So there are lots of people, actually. And of course, I came up with a petition to call on the government, and to call on the government, especially through its concerned ministries, like the Ministry of Water Resources, like the Nigerian Hydrological Agency, which works under the Ministry of Water Resources, like the Nigerian Meteorological Agency and other concerned agencies. I started a petition on change.org to get the attention of the government. Of course, like every other person is doing, but this time around through a petition, which about 2,000 persons have signed so far, to see how we can get the attention, just to, you know, pressurize them to do something. And the petition has 6 asks. Of course, the asks are numerous, but we just tried to summarize it into these 6. Some of the asks, some of the requests are immediate, some of them are subsequent, like asking that the government, especially at the federal, state, and local government levels, to, you know, work together through their ministries and agencies to provide relief materials. This was very important. And we didn't see this happen until the later times of the flooding. We expect that as the flooding started, the government would have moved out to start providing relief materials, relocating victims and all that. We didn't see it. I was also expecting to see the armed forces, you know, take charge, because this is an emergency situation. People were, you know, trying to maneuver their ways using local boats to rescue themselves. And lots of people were drowning in that. Through that method. So I was expecting to see the Air Force come in with helicopters, the Navy come in with boats to rescue people. Unfortunately, we didn't see all that happen. So the petition is also asking that the federal government should implement the newly approved National Flood Emergency Preparedness and Response Plan. So they came up with this, they announced this preparedness and response plan on October 14th. And we're expecting that would, you know, culminate into some quick activities and actions. But we also did not see that happen. Just recently, the federal government announced the Ministry of Water Resources as well as Housing and Development to come up with something in the next 30, 90 days or so. And that is not timely, I must say. Well, the petition also is also asking that the National Emergency Management Agency, you know, do something, as well as other ministries anyway, do something about building a dam downstream. We've talked about that earlier. It's also asking that the Ecological Fund Office should deploy the Ecological Fund to effectively and transparently address flood challenges in the country. So now we have what we call the Ecological Fund Office, which is funded by some percentage of the federal allocation. So this office, they have their headquarters in Abuja. They are supposed to take charge when it comes to issues of flooding, issues of desertification and droughts, and other serious environmental issues. And they have a very huge sum of money, which is in their coffers, to sort out, to take care of issues like this and make sure that they are not negatively impactful on Nigeria. But we are not seeing anything from them. And also that flood vulnerability and risk maps should be adopted as working documents to support decision-making at all steps of flood disaster management. And finally, that the Ministry of Health and the Nigeria Center for Disease Control should swing into action to make sure that disease does not break out in communities that have been affected by the flooding. These are just like a summary of what we're asking through that petition from the government and other concerned agencies.
I think it's very, 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 very important. When we put out this podcast, I'm going to actually link some of this the petition to it also, and put out some of the information. And I think I would even take it upon myself to actually look for some of these petitions and look for other things that people are, awareness programs and campaigns that people are trying to put out there, and maybe just give a retweet or like draw people's attention to it from my own side. Yeah, it does. Like I always say, like, even if it's one person that just gets to read this and just gets to sign and adds to that over 2,000 people, like you rightly said, and I just think the most I think the most important thing that I keep saying at every single time is we owe it to ourselves to educate ourselves and to be aware enough to understand what is happening in our environment, happening in our society, happening around us, happening to our fellow countrymen and women, because that's how we truly start to care, and that's how change really starts to happen. Even if we're not directly affected right now at this moment, if we can sympathize with the people who are actually affected and join them in protesting and join them in these various campaigns and petitions, that actually moves the conversation forwards, and that actually brings their own relief quickly. Because Nigerians, we have this thing about when something does not directly impact or affects us, we easily just look the other way and we are not concerned about it, right? It's just like we hear the horrific things happening every day in the north, right? In terms of insecurities and the rest. And majority of us just like, we are so used to it at this particular point that we don't even think of it anymore. Even when we hear, oh, this amount of girls have been adopted or these people have been killed in this particular place. Like, it's just so normal. Yeah, it's just so normal. I don't really think Nigerians don't care. I think laying out groundworks to be like, okay, just take 5 minutes out of your day to actually sign this petition, or take 5 minutes out of your day to actually retweet this thing, or make it go viral, or do any... Like, I think pointing people to something they can do that immediately is actually something
that can make an impact.
Yes, that can make an impact. Yeah, exactly the point. Yeah. Because people will be willing to even send ₦100, right? If they know they're sending it to an organization that is actually getting work done. Like at the end of the day, like, people are not heartless or wicked at the end of the day. It's just that they are not being properly informed. That is one. I bet you so many people do not know the impact that this flooding has actually had. Right, because they don't bother to look, and because the information is not right there staring at their face, right? Because there are other things to like actually make you laugh and don't worry about certain issues like this. But I only got to this level of awareness because I went down the rabbit hole to see what's really going on here and what are the impacts it's truly having and the rest of it. And that's part of the reason why we actually have this platform, is just to put out things like this out there, and people should actually have this information, and the sky is the limit from there on. So
yeah, of course.
Yes. So we've rounding up, right? I'll just like you to talk about some of the things that like we just rightly said, what are the things that individuals, people can actually do to move this conversation forward, right? And like, maybe just appeal to the Nigerian people or anybody who will listen to this, like, what can people do as on an individual level, on a local level, on a government, on a local government level, state government, and even the federal government? What are some of the things that we can actually all do that can help mitigate some of these things from happening in the future, and even help right now for people that are seriously affected by these particular events?
Yeah, so the flooding problem is everyone's problem. Everybody's problem. So it's not just a government problem, it's everybody's problem, because who gets affected? It's you and I, it's the people in the community. So they have to see the problem like their problem. And that would be like the first step to them not getting affected as much as we have seen lately. So what can they do as individuals? They can keep abreast with early warning information that is published by the Nigerian Meteorological Agency. That is also published by the Nigerian Hydrological Agency. They can keep abreast to this information see how they can use the information to plan their activities, to know when to leave the community if they are living in places that are prone to flooding, or to know how to, you know, reduce their vulnerability. That may be difficult for them to achieve because it requires some level of coordination to actually respond to early warning information. So we expect that the government should support in that regard. But where the government is not supporting, people should see the problem like their problem and take advantage of this information that is usually released every year to make some very important decisions. I also expect that civil society organizations should do more work. They should be able to help take some of this information down to early warning information down to local communities and explain it to them in languages they will understand. The flooding is going to come this year. Do not plant in this place. Do not build a house in this place. This place is prone to flooding. You know, so civil society organizations and other well-meaning Nigerians should help take this information to communities, especially local communities, right, where people are not very well informed. Also, I liked what I saw on Twitter, where some individuals were helping to collect resources, that's donations from people all over the world, to support internally displaced persons in some parts of the country where the flooding caused some devastation. So that was very beautiful to see. And we encourage those kind of practices even more, yeah, because of course the government can't do it all alone. And it was good to see some individuals putting work to see that some of the impacts of the flooding was ameliorated. I pray to see more of that, you know, in the coming days, and just to see that people do not suffer so much from the flooding. Now, as people go back to their communities, because now the flood waters are receding and they have receded in some parts that were hitherto flooded, people should be should be careful, especially as we saw in cases of rodents and some dangerous animals, snakes and the likes, moving into some houses. People should move back into their houses with care, and they should live with the consciousness that they are living in flood hazard zones. They should have that consciousness to help them with their planning and all that. Now, for the government, of course, we mentioned it before, this problem is a scientific problem, and it's a geographic one at that. It must be treated like one. The government should be more proactive. They should take advantage of flood risk and vulnerability maps. They should enforce planning laws. People should not live in some places, really. People should not reside or farm in some places. In fact, for the River Niger and the River Benue, for most part of it, people should not be residing at least 500 meters from those waters. I don't know how that's going to happen. If the government can come up with some kind of relocation plan to relocate people that are living in these river valleys, people that are living in places that are prone to flooding, that will really go a long way to relocate them, resettle them, so that they can continue their lives without facing that level of risk. It's a long list of what can be done, what cannot be done, or what should be done rather. And the government bears the major responsibility, but the people, the residents, Nigerians as well, should know that this flooding problem is their problem, is everyone's problem.
Thank you very, very much for saying that. And I truly, truly appreciate it. I hope that message resonates with everyone. And I hope people pick up some useful and practical tips and information that has been given out here today, especially helping one another in these times, getting informed and being aware of what's going on. People getting the right information about where they should build, where they should live. And for the people who are seriously affected, we send our loves, our best wishes, and our prayers to them. And if there's any organizations and social causes that are actually helping out, I would actually do a little bit of research and link it also to this episode and see how people can actually support those causes, right? And I would like to round up with, where can people actually find you on social media, online? How can people read your work or get in touch with you, just in case they want to actually get further information and they want to actually help in any way they can? So how can people actually get in contact with you?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. So my Twitter handle is at Chudi Peter. Chudi is Chuddy. Chudi Peter. That's my Twitter handle, at Chudi Peter. And then, of course, to see some of the research which I've done that have provided solutions to flooding, you can simply type my name on Google, Chukwudi Njoku, and simply type flooding Nigeria in front of it. And of course, you'll see these maps, you're going to see this research, and they are definitely going to be very helpful in decision making with regards to flood mitigation.
Yeah, thank you very, very much for taking the time to have this conversation with me. I can't really thank you enough. I know you're a very, very busy man, and I really appreciate the fact that you took time out of your day to sit down with us and get to inform and educate us about what's actually going on around us. And do take care of yourself, enjoy the rest of the day, and I'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you very much, and more grace to your elbow with the work you guys do.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening to this conversation. To support this podcast, please like, share, leave a comment or a review, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at peers_arena. Thank you once more.